Solar panels are emerging as the cheapest method to produce electricity in many markets around the world. That's according to our next guest, who studies technological change and public policy's effects on it. There are a bunch of solar power development projects going on around Wisconsin of various sizes, and that's fueling hopes for cleaner and more sustainable power and for in-state labor opportunities. Some challenges are slowing the transition away from non-renewable sources, including investigations into Chinese labor that produced some of the panels planned to be used for Wisconsin projects. There are currently over 20 solar farms providing energy to utilities in Wisconsin, with more on the way, according to Renew Wisconsin. I want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about solar power generation in Wisconsin, around the country, around the world? Do you generate solar power on your own rooftop or where you work? What was it like to set that up? Do you work in utility scale solar power in one way or another? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Greg Nemeth is a professor at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs, where he teaches on energy systems analysis, policy analysis, and international environmental policy. He's the author of the book, How Solar Became Cheap, A Model for Low-Carbon Innovation. Greg, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. It's good to be back.
I keep seeing reporting, Greg, about the surprising to some people acceleration of solar development. Is it going faster than you might have expected?
Yeah, I think it's going faster than just about anyone would have expected. It's growing, you know, in general about 30% a year, and it's grown that fast for about 30 years. And anytime something grows that fast, you know, like that's like adoption of cell phones and things like that, you expect it to slow down. And that's what people have been predicting with solar for about the last 20 years, and it hasn't. It continues to grow at 30%. So that's why we have solar now becoming considered a potentially central part of the world's energy system, and including in our state as well.
What's driving that?
A few different items. The number one, I would say, is the continued fall in the price of producing solar panels. So they've come down about 90% in the last 10 years. And that also extends to savings in the installation of solar panels. So those have gotten cheaper as well. We also see people becoming more familiar with solar power and being able to talk to neighbors who have installed it already to find out who good installers are, when they would expect to get a payback, things like that. We also have supportive policy, and it's coming at multiple levels. We've got state policy that for a while has been there to produce some incentives for installing solar. It's stronger in other states, but we do have state incentives for that. And then we have a big deal about a year ago, the federal government passed the Inflation Reduction Act, so that created federal incentives that are available to Wisconsin energy consumers to install solar. So there's a variety of support for solar. The technology continues to improve. The pathway for continued cost reductions seems clear to most people, and it starts to look like you can configure solar to work with a battery in your basement that's also becoming inexpensive, and electric vehicles that are also becoming less expensive. And so there's a variety of ways that solar is coming into people's lives, in addition to larger scale installations from companies and utilities.
An early knock on the idea of solar power in Wisconsin is it's Wisconsin. We don't always have sun. We have snow that covers things up from time to time, shorter days in the winter with less sunlight. What have we learned over the last couple of decades about whether solar is really viable here in the state?
Absolutely. That's the number one concern people raise. And some of the evidence that you can see that there's ways to address those concerns are look at where solar has been installed. And it's been installed in lots of not that sunny places. You know, the biggest installer of solar for the last 10 years has been China. And northern China isn't that much sunnier than Wisconsin. If we look at Germany, the first large market for solar, that's got less sun than Wisconsin. And same for Japan. So we have examples of places that have installed a lot of solar without a lot of sunshine. And in the last 5 years, we've seen in Wisconsin quite a few companies that are interested in developing solar in Wisconsin. So you can make money installing solar, even in a place that's not the sunniest in the world, like Wisconsin. And then the answer to how you go from being a little bit of solar to potentially having solar being a large part of the whole energy system is that you integrate solar with other sources of energy. So you can have grids like a transmission and electric grid that connects solar to other places, so that if you have a thunderstorm come over and cover up one area of the state, another part of the state that's connected can be producing solar. So that's one soft way to do it. Another stronger way is integrating solar with other types of clean energy, like renewable or like wind power, where solar and wind are not that well correlated. So it might not be sunny, but it's still windy, and that can be in the winter and night especially. And then other types of clean energy like nuclear and geothermal can provide part of the system when solar is not available as well. So if you start thinking about it from a system level where we've got lots of different interconnected sources of electricity, solar makes a lot of sense, even if we don't have to depend on it 100% of the time.
Talking to Greg Nemeth, professor, UW-Madison La Follette School of Public Affairs, looking at the rise, the exponential rise of solar power around the world and big in Wisconsin, a lot of utility scale projects in the works or actually online right now. A Badger Hollow Solar Farm in Iowa County on the way, Two Creeks Solar Park in Manitowoc County. Greg, what are you watching for when you look at these utility scale solar projects, solar farms, whatever we want to call them? Are we getting bigger and bigger in Wisconsin?
Yeah. So those two that you mentioned are the two big ones we have in the state right now. So they're, you know, on the order of 200 megawatts each. You know, there's a gas power plant on the UW Madison campus. It's a little bit less than that. So we're talking about a substantial power station. What I guess the first thing I'd look at is that those were built. So this is when we're talking about like 5 years ago, solar developer companies started saying, look, Wisconsin's got resources there. There's space, there's demand, there's enough sun, and we can make money building large scale solar there. So those two have gone in. So that was to prove that Wisconsin is a place that you can do large solar, that there's a place to do business there. That the panels work with the amount of sunshine, that it's interconnected with the grid, that the regulators can make it work. And so a lot of things have been proven with those first two large-scale systems. As we go forward and we're thinking about more systems of that scale or potentially larger or smaller than that, the two things that I would look at as being really consequential are one, grid infrastructure. So making sure that there's ways that new projects can get connected to the grid and provide electricity to a variety of consumers that might use it. That's number one. And number two is the siting and permitting. So making sure that those who live around the facility have a voice and that their concerns about the aesthetics or the construction effort that goes into it are heard and that they're addressed. And there's things you can do with large solar farms like those two to make them work better and make them work better for the community. And so community engagement is a really important part of it. And that going forward will be increasingly really what determines whether the state has a little bit of solar like we do now or a lot of solar, which is what a lot of states are moving towards.
Let's bring on a caller. David is with us in Verona. David, hi.
Hi. I was just going to tell you about panels that I installed on our roof about 5 years ago, or I had them installed.
Yeah, what did you want to tell us about? How did it go?
Well, it was very easy. We got we went through a place called Focus on Energy, which is an advocacy group for solar power. They recommended an installer who came out to the house and very quickly and easily installed 15 panels. At that time, it was about $1,000 per panel, but I think it's a lot less now. So the total cost was $15,000. We got $6,000 in government rebates, a tax rebate and a incentive payment. So it was $9,000 total cost. In the 5 years that I've had it, we've saved $1,000 a year on electricity costs. So we've already paid off more than half of the actual price of the panel.
David, thanks a lot for sharing that experience. Greg, how big a part of the story is personal, you know, rooftop solar like David has?
Oh, that's great to hear from David about that. And I would just, you know, as he suggests, the prices have come down substantially in the last 5 years with the Inflation Reduction Act, a similar level of incentive, about a 30% tax credit, so similar to what he got 5 years ago, is available. And yeah, I mean, the big difference between large scale solar that we were talking about a couple of minutes ago and rooftop solar like David has is that David can tell his friends and his relatives about his experience. He can tell about an installer that worked well with him. He can talk about his energy savings. He can talk about any problems he had. He can warn about installers that might not have worked out so well. And I think that's something that my own research has proven really impactful. And we call it the academic jargon or our peer effects, where you're getting information not from a company, not from a university, not from something you read online, but from friends and relatives, so trusted sources. And that's a really important conduit for any new technology to get over the unfamiliarity of having solar panels on your roof and not knowing who to call. So I think David's story is exactly why we see solar spreading in a way that kind of comes from clusters, because people know each other, and it's much more likely to have solar installed within a mile of another installation because of exactly stories like David's that that give people a conduit to trusted information about it.
Thanks for that call, David. We're talking about advances and obstacles in solar power generation in Wisconsin and beyond. Greg Nemeth stays with us, professor at the UW-Madison La Follette School of Public Affairs. He researches public policy effects on technological change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about solar power, in Wisconsin in particular? Do you work in the solar or renewable energy sectors? Join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a solar production facility near you? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up the conversation about the development of solar energy here in Wisconsin, how it compares to the rest of the country and the world. Greg Nemeth is with us, professor at the UW-Madison La Follette School of Public Affairs, solar energy expert. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to our callers. Stella is with us in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. In 2005, we put a 3.8 kilowatt So a PV array on the roof of our garage, and also solar hot water. The array cost, I think it was $30,000, and we got $10,000 in rebates, so it ended up costing us $20,000. And currently, we're in the process of adding just a little bit more than doubling our PV generation. And that we're going to be adding more panels to the racking on the, expanding the racking and adding more on the garage. And plus we're adding a new kind of panel that is to the roof of one roof on our house, that they're about 6 inches off the roof, and they each have their own inverter. I'm not real versed with all this, but anyhow,
gotcha.
We're in Sturgeon Bay. We have a city-owned utility, and we have a grid intertie, so when we're generating, we have net metering, so when we're generating, we run our meter backwards, and when we're drawing from the grid, we run forward.
Stella, thanks a lot for the call and sharing your experience. And Greg, yeah, how we integrate a rooftop project like Stella's with our local utility, it's been the subject of some controversy in our state laws. What do you look for when it comes to, you know, can people like Stella effectively deduct from their energy bill when they're selling electricity back to the utility?
Yeah, key issue. But first of all, Stella is a heroic early adopter. If we think of solar in Wisconsin in 2005, that was really one of the first couple hundred systems, probably. And so if she and her family are going back to the solar market to upgrade and expand, they're going to find a much better set of panels and much cheaper prices than they did. So that's really impressive. But yeah, it's technically not an issue. We know how to connect a system to the grid. The issue is really on the financial part. And the financial part comes from regulations, because regulators decide, the Public Service Commission decides what we pay for electricity, and they also decide how something like solar gets handled in terms of, do we just pay people to run their meter backwards if they make extra, or do we say it's actually worth even more, like mid-afternoon last Wednesday when it was in the 90s and everybody's using air conditioning, maybe you actually want to pay more than the grid price at that period, or do you give people less than the grid price, which could be the way things are going as well. So there's a few different reactions to how those rates work out. One reaction is if the rates are kind of not as generous to providing net metering, we get less solar. But we might end up in that case getting people starting to get serious about putting batteries in their basements or taking advantage of a much bigger battery than they could ever put in their basement, which might be in their electric vehicle, and start to store some of that electricity instead of selling it back to the grid at a low price. So there's some pretty important incentives that come from the rates that people get for what happens to the electricity that they don't consume directly.
Thanks a lot for that call. Before we go back to our callers, Greg, I mentioned earlier some federal investigations into how some of our solar panels are produced, many of them in China. There's federal regulations saying, hey, we can't import products made with forced labor in China. There are some solar panels, I understand, waiting for installation in some of these Wisconsin projects, pending the results of that kind of investigation. How big a problem is this and the wider concern about relying on China for a lot of this technology?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've looked into that a fair amount. And the issue is that some of the input material for solar, a lot of it comes from a province in western China called Xinjiang, where there is forced labor. It's not clear that they're using forced labor in those facilities, because to do that process is mostly about these large furnaces. It isn't very manual intensive, but regardless, there's an issue there, and we don't have transparency from China or from those companies. So there's reason to be suspicious. But the bigger issue is that China's producing 70% of the world's solar panels. And so the question is, does that put us, the US or other countries as well, in a situation in which we might be similarly dependent as we are on oil producers? And I would say right away, it's not the same thing as oil, because solar panels last a long time. So if China cuts off our solar panel supply, we've still got all our existing solar panels. So it's not really a good comparison that way, even though people make that comparison. But we are seeing, because of the federal incentives in the last year, our much more production of domestic solar panels. And so it's not as big as what is being done in China right now, but it's enough to make a difference. And it's enough for China to ever think twice about cutting off our solar supply, because now we can credibly say, you know, if we get cut off from solar panel supply, we can start to make our own because we have something already and we could scale it up in a couple of years. So that's been a big difference over the last couple of years. We're going to have much more domestic manufacturing and getting panels from places other than China.
Talking about the rapid rise of solar power here in Wisconsin and beyond with Greg Nemeth from UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. Back to your calls now. Mike is with us in Superior. Mike, hi.
Hi. There's a building construction issue that I can't seem to get anybody to understand. A flat roof on a building serves two purposes: to keep the water and snow out and to keep the heat in. Roofs generally last 20 years. Some of them go 30 years. When those roofs need to be replaced, nobody's calculating what it's going to take to pull off those panels, put a roof back on, and replace the panels. That's something that people who are in the roofing business can't seem to get an answer to, and I'd like to find out if your guest has any thoughts on that.
Mike, thanks for the call. And I've wondered about this too, Greg. I know roofs have another purpose, and they don't last forever, like Mike says. Are we factoring this into the rooftop solar side of the conversation?
Yeah, well, it certainly saves costs to do the roof and the solar panel installation at the same time. So if people's timing works out, and typically, even if it's close, it makes a lot of sense to do your new roof at the same time you're doing the solar, because, you know, a modern roof could last 10 to 20 years and solar panels are guaranteed for 20 to 30 years. So most of that, if you do it at the same time, you're likely to be on the same time schedule for it. If you put new solar panels on an old roof, and then you need to replace that roof in before the solar panels are done, yeah, you would have the cost of removing the panels and reinstalling them, which, you know, could add, I don't know, $1,000 or $2,000 to the cost of the system. So the timing of your roof and your panels is something to take into account. And if you can do them at the same time, it's definitely a good way to go.
Thanks a lot for that call. Greg, a lot of our callers, not surprisingly, interested in personal rooftop solar. When it comes to the utility scale projects we were talking about earlier, are there obstacles you see out there that we're going to have to overcome to continue this rise of solar power in the country?
Well, part of it is there going to be demand for more electricity, because these are big systems. So if we're adding to capacity of the grid, are we going to need that? And our electricity demand has been pretty flat for the last 15 years or so. So that could be one thing that halts it. But on the other hand, we have this looming source of new electricity demand, which is electric vehicles. And we have less than 1% of our new vehicles in Wisconsin are electric vehicles. But in the rest of the country, it's more than that. In other countries, it's closer to 25 or 30%. And that's likely to be the direction that we go as well. So there will be a new source of demand for electricity, which is electric vehicles. And so we're going to need more generation, and solar is a good solution for that. So that's part of the answer. I think that the two big limitations, I would say, are one is on permitting and siting. So making sure that communities are supportive of the facilities that get planned, because they do take space, they take time, there's construction involved, but then they run silently and without any pollution and without much maintenance at all for the next 20 to 30 years. So there's really a benefit after that initial period of disruption. And then the grid infrastructure too, just to the extent that new power lines need to be put in. And so those are also need community input and have aesthetic impacts, and people need to take those into account as well. But in terms of the technology and the need for a clean source of reliable electricity, we've got a lot going for us with solar. And if we start to think about integrating into a larger system that has storage on the grid, for example, when it's not sunny, when it's night, when it's winter, then we can see a lot more solar happening. And that's certainly what's been happening in the rest of the country as well. So the whole country's got about 4% electricity from solar, and we have less than 2%. So there's a ways to go for the state to catch up. So I'd expect more to come on solar in Wisconsin.
Greg, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. Good talking to you.
That's Greg Nemeth, professor at the UW-Madison La Follette School of Public Affairs. We talked to him today about ongoing solar power projects in Wisconsin. If you have a story to share on your rooftop or in your community, let us know. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.